little background on GE Vernova, specifically wind energy. So we are the largest wind manufacturing facility in the portfolio globally. So this is across multiple facilities that manufacture. What you're going to see that we do here, the machine head and the hub, that we've got other plants within globally within our network that manufacture the blades, and we basically and we purchase like the towers. So those are basically the four main aspects of wind turbine.
I got to see the windmill factory here in Pensacola yesterday, the GE Vernova factory that's just off of Scenic. And, oh my God, it's amazing. You wouldn't even know it's there except you were trying to look. And I got invited to go be part of a tour yesterday with First Place Partners. And that's Brandy McGraw. She is the executive site leader. So she's in charge of this facility. And it's amazing. I mean, genuinely amazing. I was just blown away by what I saw. They employ 700 people. They are the biggest manufacturer of wind in GE's entire network. Vernova is kind of like their energy division. There are four parts to the windmill, and in understanding those parts is going to be important for understanding what we make here. You have the tower, that's the stick, okay? That's the 300-foot pole that the windmill sits on. Then you have the machine head, that's inside the big rectangular case they call the nacelle. The nacelle itself is just the case, but inside that is the machine hub. That has all the gearing and the power plant and what basically creates the electricity. And that's one of the things that they make here in Pensacola is they take the nacelle that comes from elsewhere here in Pensacola. You see them being shipped down the street on trucks, and then they fill that with all the parts. So there's the tower, there's the machine head, then there's the hub. The hub is the sort of looks like the top of a, a space rocket. When the astronauts come back down to Earth, it's kind of that, that four-sided piece. That's the piece that the windmill blades attach to. Kind of like on a plane. You know, on a propeller plane, you have the blades of the propeller attached to a little cone. That little cone, that's the hub. They make that here, too. So they don't make the blades here. The blades get made elsewhere because you want those close to the site because they're very difficult to transport. They contract out for the towers. But we make the two most crucial components right here in Pensacola. They make them. And it's an amazing facility. They also do repower, which is like refurbishing, okay, when things have been out in the field for a long time and they need to be remanufactured or have new parts put in them, basically. And this is not a very easy thing to do up on top of a 300-foot stick. So they basically, they can do some repairs on site, but they also will sometimes just kind of bring them back and repair the parts that need them. So what do they make?
We also make 2 megawatt units, 3 megawatt units, and specifically we do the machine head. So the machine head is the mechanical portion of what goes in what Sean creates. So he makes a nacelle, we put the machine head into that, along with the drivetrains that we build, and then the hub. And the hub is basically the point where your blades attach.
Right, so they have like 4 lines. I was trying to think about it in my head because we're not allowed to take any pictures or video. It's all proprietary. It's all secrets that they don't want the competitors to know. So we weren't allowed to take any video or photos, which, you know, is driving me crazy the whole day. Mostly because I want to take pictures so I can remember stuff vividly. But they have one line that is for the 2 megawatt nacelles. They have one line that is for the 3 megawatt nacelles. They have another line that is for the hubs and another line that's kind of like the parts and, you know, the way they move stuff around. But they have, I mean, this is genuinely an enormous capacity facility.
The facility is a little bit under 400,000 square feet. We do 4 10s. So Monday through Thursday, we do 2 10-hour shifts. And from a weekly capacity perspective, we do about 40 hubs a week, 24 2-megawatt machine heads. We can do up to 24 drivetrains and repower units, and 24 3-megawatt machine heads.
Okay, so again, the rectangular piece, they're putting out 24 of the 2-megawatt type, and then they're putting out 24 of the 3-megawatt type, the bigger ones. They're also putting out 40 of those hubs every single week. Now, that might not seem like a lot, but compared to, she was giving us a comparison facility in Germany.
Those numbers are actually somewhat phenomenal when it comes to wind manufacturing. We would be considered a high volume manufacturer. So to put it in perspective, one of our wind turbine manufacturing facilities in Germany makes 7 units a month. So 7 units a month, what is that? Basically like 2 units a week. And you can see what we're outputting in a week. So we're extremely high volume.
So facility A in Germany makes 7 of these machine heads in a month. So 2 a week, a little bit less than 2 a week. The facility here in Pensacola makes 48 of them in a week, like 700 people. It's unbelievable, the level of production. And it's kind of like this secret, not secret, that people don't realize how significant this is to wind energy nationally. And I've got some numbers for you. I'll give you in a second. But just, it's like Pensacola is vital to wind production of electricity in the United States.
So some things on wind energy, because I think it is not understood how big an impact little Pensacola has when it comes to the entire wind manufacturing industry. We're kind of a big deal, guys. So like, we should all feel good about that.
We are. I mean, it really is a big deal. Like I said, I'll run you some of the numbers here in just a second. John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
That's right. Still rolling accident-free right now. I-10, I-110 are looking good. 90, 98 are flowing smoothly. Not seeing any delays. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
All right. So to kind of wrap your brain around the significance of Pensacola, Plant Crist, okay? It used to be called Plant Crist, now the Gulf Clean Energy Center, okay? Converted from coal to natural gas, right? You're familiar with the former Gulf Power, now FPL facility up on the river, which is really just up the road from where they make these machine heads and the hubs. They have a capacity of somewhere in the vicinity of 1,000 megawatts, okay? A megawatt is I always get the numbers, the relationship between them confused. I think a megawatt is 1 million kilowatts or 1,000. Anyway, it's 1,000 megawatts, okay? And every week here, so total output, you know, the capacity of the Crist plant, I'm going to call it that because it's what you used to, is 1,000 megawatts. Every week, they make at the Vernova Center, they make 120 megawatts of power output. That's 6,000 megawatts a year. That means that every year they're making 6 Plant Crists worth of wind energy. Like, John, I see your eyes. Like, that's a lot. You know, there's about 425 terawatts in production for wind across the entire country. That's about 10%. By the way, 10% of all U.S. energy comes from wind. And if you've not driven across the Midwest in the last 10 years, you have no idea. Like, it used to be almost nothing. They used to see them out in Arizona and going to California and some. But we just recently drove back and forth from Denver to here. Oh, my God, they're everywhere. They are everywhere. So about 10% of all U.S. energy is U.S. electricity is made by wind. And by my rough estimate, this wasn't a number they provided. This is me going home and crunching numbers on my own. By my rough estimate, we produce about here. We make about 3% of that total. So, I mean, a lot, an awful lot of energy. Again, about 6,000 megawatts of capacity a year, which is amazing. Each one of those little ones, just to kind of maybe put it in a little perspective, does about 1,500 homes, right? And we make, 120 of those a week, okay? So, 48 of those a week, and then you do the math out for the year. Anyway, so getting back to her description of the plant, just so you kind of understand.
So, when it comes to just overall wind energy, there are over 75,000 active wind turbines in the U.S. So that's a little bit under 1,800 projects or wind farms. So for like a wind turbine, a 3.6 megawatt wind turbine can produce enough energy to support 1,500 homes annually.
And again, the significance particularly of this facility, the GE Vernova facility that we toured yesterday, here's one example of a massive project that they are the major supplier for. It's actually kind of funny. The power lines that connect it go to Phoenix, but the wind farm itself is in New Mexico. It's called the SunZia project.
One of the things I want to wrap up on is SunZia. So our big project that we're supplying to this year is SunZia. This is the largest wind farm project in North America. So this is located in New Mexico. It was an initial, or will be an investment of a little bit over $5 billion. It is expected to start producing electricity in the end of this year or January of 2026. And that will be enough to be able to support 1.5 million households. So the SunZia project was a total of 1,000 wind turbines, and we got 674 of those. So we will wrap up delivering for that project probably October timeframe. So this is a huge milestone.
So 1,000 windmills. We made about 2/3 of them here. The key components, again, the machine head and the hub. And that's going to produce, what, 3.5 terawatts, I think, is the general number, 3,500 megawatts that they're producing. And that's wrapping up this year. Now, John, you're looking at me with these, like, bright eyes. Like, did you have any idea that you knew that we made the pieces to the windmill?
Right, I knew that.
But did you know how much came from here?
No, I had no idea.
And these things are enormous when you get up. And you know, and the cranes that they need to move them around, they've got the largest forklift in the world. That's just one example. And so when you're driving past on scenic and you see on the right, on the, well, if you're going north, if you see on the water side, you see all of the you know, again, what kind of looks like a four-sided die, okay, with rounded edges. That's the hub. That's what the blades go into. I call them propellers. What the blades go into. And then the other part, the big chunky part, the big square part, is the nacelle, but it's really the machine head. The nacelle is just the shell. They make, again, 24 of each type, 2 and 4. So they make like 50 of those a week. So like 2,000 of those a year that we make here in Pensacola. It's unbelievable. It is a massive, I mean, the numbers of the economic impact are unfathomable. And again, like right here in Pensacola. And a lot of the people that work there are contract labor, like they work for Landrum, okay? And a lot of the people are full-time, you know, work for GE. And there's a progression between them. But I so wish I could give you video and pictures. I'm just telling you, it is phenomenal. And to think about, you know, a lot of, we just don't know a lot of times what people do if it's not our job. You know, and if you don't see a facility, we don't know what it does. And I was blown away. So we'll talk more about this throughout the day. But, you know, and some funny stories to tell you from when we're actually, this was the, she's the, you know, the head of the operation. We were actually getting led around by one of the team A or A leaders. I forget his exact title, but he was great. D. And we'll talk about him maybe next hour.
You primarily, the shells come here, you fill the shells, and then they attach the blades on top of the towers that you buy.
Yeah. So the cell comes here, we're going to put our machine head in the nacelle. We're going to assemble the guts in the hub, and we're going to ship the hub and the machine head to the job site. We outsource the towers. So the tower supplier is going to deliver the tower. The blades can be outsourced or they can be made internally, and that's going to be delivered. And yeah, they put it all together at the job site.
So I had a really neat opportunity yesterday with several other economic development people to go tour, the First Place Partners was the group, to go tour the GE Vernova plant where they make windmills. Right here in Pensacola, an unbelievable opportunity to watch a production facility in operation that it was, I mean, kind of mind-blowing. And the only thing that I'm, like, I wish were not true is I wasn't allowed to take any photos or video, so I can't show it to you. I still want to show it to you. It's so cool. This is Brandy McGraw. She is the plant leader. So she is the primary person in charge of this operation that employs 700 people. Just got $70 million invested in the last 3 years by GE in this facility because they perform. I love to, you know, they are an incredible production facility. They run two lines, two shifts, 4 tens is what they do. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, they're running, you know, 2 10-hour shifts, and they're producing, I mean, and honestly, kind of an unbelievable amount of production out of this facility. They so the hub is the little, looks like the top of an, like the astronauts return to Earth in, that kind of four-shaped rounded piece that's like the nose cone of the windmill, the blades attached to that. And then that, which rotates, attaches to what you might have thought of, and I always thought of as the nacelle, but it's actually the machine head. The nacelle is just the shell, okay, that white plasticky kind of thing that goes around the outside. And I know the industry actually be like, don't say it that way. Well, okay, it is. And then the inside is all of the gearing and the generator and all of the cooling, like everything that is the guts of the windmill is inside that. And then they build those here. So they make 40 of the hubs a week. They make 24 of the 2-megawatt machine heads, and they make 24 of the 3-megawatt machine heads. So they're making, think about this, 24 times 2 plus 3, 24 times 5 is 120 megawatts of energy production here in Pensacola every single week. Week after week, 6,000 megawatts a year is they're producing here in Pensacola. That's unbelievable. I mean, that's like an amazing, each one of those, each one is enough power for 1,500 homes, if you want to think of it that way. So, as I said, I can't show it to you, but I can tell it to you on the radio. I couldn't show it to you on the radio anyway. But when you go in this plant, which kind of looks like just a big box, and then inside it's a giant assembly line. One line is building the big nacelles, or the big machine heads. One line is doing smaller and doing some of the refurbishment stuff. One line is doing just the hubs, okay, and they kind of go out opposite doors, basically. And then that's what you see laying around, like at the port. You see them all wrapped up, you know, shrink-wrapped so they don't get damaged in transit. By the way, it was really cool to watch them put shrink wrap on one of these, you know, maybe 20-foot-tall hubs, I think, roughly. And it's basically a guy with a giant pole on the end of which looks like a broom, except it's a flame-throwing broom. So they're covered in the wrinkly wrap, and then they're using the flame to heat it down and shrink it. Just like if you've ever used a heat gun to shrink wrap anything, it's the same process, just on a much bigger scale. So that was pretty wild. Then we got a tour around the facility, and our guy was great. I always want to say his name right. We called him D. Damaris Sims. And, you know, first chance is like overlooking the bay, and you build these things gradually on these giant, I mean, in some cases, they're on rail cars and they get moved down the assembly line. In other cases, they can be moved by overhead cranes. You know, we're talking like 40-ton cranes, things like that. But then eventually they get loaded onto the actual flatbeds for the trains and then get shipped wherever they need to get shipped. But, you know, just as a for instance, okay, some of these, like where the windmill blades go into the hub, you have the entire, I don't know, I'm thinking like a 12-foot diameter circle that they attach to, and it's got maybe 50 nuts that have to all be attached and torqued. Torqued, of course, by, you know, not by hand, but they have to, that whole process has things like when you torque a nut, when you tighten it down at first, you tighten it down, you put a yellow stripe on it. And then when you actually tighten it to tolerance, you put a red stripe on it. So when they're coming out the end, they're all red stripe. But that's just a little safety check mark for how they do this.
If you look inside, you'll see some of the hardware, some of these nuts, they have what's called torque stripes on them. So some of them have only a yellow stripe on it. That's where we did just an initial snug down, right? That lets us know it's not torqued yet, and it does need to be torqued. So once we do actually torque these larger bolts, we'll put a red torque stripe on it.
How many foot-pounds?
It depends on the assembly, but some of this stuff goes 500, 700 foot-pounds.
500 to 700 foot-pounds of torque on these things. Because you've got a, what, 120, 150 foot blade, three of them, attached to this hub that spins around, attached to the machine head that is on top of a 300 foot pole that is delivering power 500 miles away. You know, like, that's a big thing. And just for perspective, if you don't know, like, your lug nuts on your tire are maybe 100 foot pounds of torque. You know, so 500 to 700 foot pounds of torque is a little more. It's a little higher than you would do. One of the assembly mechanisms that they do is they'll have these circular parts that go inside of other circular, like, tubes, basically, conical parts. And the way they make those fit together is by heating the outside one so that the ring gets a little bigger. And then they snug it on. And then as it cools, it shrinks into place in an immobile joint.
And just the pillow block alone has to be heated up as well in order to fit over the bearing there. So we're talking really tight tolerances, in order to make this stuff all fit together and locked together as one.
Yeah, it's not coming apart. It's not coming apart. And we'll come back to this because, again, I thought it was fascinating to watch. I'm always fascinated by assembly processes and production facilities. But just in terms of the overall significance of this plant, again, 700 people work there, and we make about the equivalent energy-wise of the entire output of Plant Crist, about 6 to 7 times that every year in wind energy, which is now about 10% of all U.S. energy is wind energy. Anyway, John Pickens has traffic on the 5. And if you have questions, text me. I'll try to answer them. No, I did not ask about blade disposal. I didn't think to ask it. Question for another time. John, go ahead.
Let's see here. No accidents to report to you right now. If you're on I-10 eastbound between Pine Forest and Highway 29, expect maybe a 3 to 4 minute delay due to congestion in the construction zone. But other than that, things are looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the 5.
Thanks so much, John. So one of the things that I had not realized, and I mean, I learned a ton, right, yesterday. But one of the things I had not really realized is, so the windmill blades spin at, what, 20 to 40 revolutions per minute, okay? They're not fast. If you've ever seen them, they're, you know, and by the way, if you've not driven out in the like Midwest or West in the last 5 years, it has changed. You know, I had always seen them like in California and 29 Palms and stuff like that. But now we drove to Denver for Christmas and oh my God, they're everywhere. They are everywhere. There's like 75,000 windmills in the U.S. right now. Okay. And for just an example, there's a big facility that they're just in the process of finishing up in New Mexico, the SunZia facility that has 1,000 of these turbines. And the Vernova plant here in Pensacola supplied about 670 of them. I mean, it's a big deal. Pensacola's a big deal for wind. Anyway, what I had never realized is I just always thought, because I'm dumb, that, okay, the propeller, the blades are spinning at, you know, say 30 revolutions per minute. And then they spin some kind of a shaft that is then spun into a electromagnet and generates some power. Oh, no, no. There's gearing. And one of the major components of the machine head is the gearing to transfer that 30 revolutions per minute and all of the momentum generated with that size of a propeller blade into, you know, 1,500, 1,800 revolutions per minute. You know, gearing transfers the ratio of the spinning, okay? So then the actual part that generates the electricity is spinning at, you know, like 1,500 revolutions per minute because of all of the gearing in there. And that's just, you know, one of the elements of it. I thought it was particularly interesting listening to Dee Damaris talk about how he got a chance to go on one. Like, usually they're just building stuff in the facility, but he had kind of won an internal contest to be able to go get on top of one out in the field.
And I've actually been on top of one of these out in the field. It's a sight to see. It's breathtaking, really. 300 foot up sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah, about 300 feet up.
No elevator.
Oh no. So
no elevator.
Depending on the person going up or technician, they have a what's called lift assist. So you'll have a harness on. It's got a few hooks, and you'll hook yourself to. And given the strength you have, it'll help assist you up. So it'll almost be like, depending on how you have it set, you don't even have to do any work. You're just doing like this. But it's ladders all the way straight to the top. And then there's three or four platforms depending on which unit you're climbing. So those platforms are there so you can take a break and get your breath. And some of those technicians, they have to climb 3 or 4 times a day. It's a challenge.
And then, you know, the parts are going up in a side basket with a similar mechanism. It's like a climb assist, kind of like how when you do rappelling ever, you know, it's like easier than you would think it is going up and down. Well, that's part of, you know, the idea here, but it's like a little machine that climbs for you. And I loved him talking about how that changed his perspective, because when you're kind of in the trench building a thing, it's easy to miss the significance of what that is.
No, I went out and did what was just a site visit.
Okay.
Yeah, so there were a few technicians who they allowed the chance to be voted for to go out into the field, and I was actually one of the first to get selected to go out into the field and what's going on out there.
See your finished product,
you can
see it being
assembled. Oh, absolutely. So the wild part of it was I climb all the way up this unit, And then I realized I saw my initials on this unit, and it was one that I actually worked on here.
Isn't that crazy? Like, he gets up to the top of it and discovers, I made this one. That's got to be a pretty wild experience.
Yeah. But it brings you a huge perspective of what we do. It may, after a while, this stuff looks small. It looks normal. You know what I mean? Seeing it for the first time for you guys, it might have that wow factor. But after you see it every day, that wow factor kind of dissipates. But then you go out into the field. You see how high up it is. You see how... The magnitude of what we do is not small stuff, right? And it opens your eyes and gives you a different respect for what we do.
I mean, I can imagine, right? It seems small until, you know, and you get it's when you're working on it, it starts to seem small, and then you get up on top of a 300, which they use cranes to install those into place. I asked because I didn't know. So you got the crane lifts up the machine head and puts it on top of the stick, and then somebody has to be up there doing that. And then the crane lifts up the front piece, the hub, and attaches that with all of its prongs to the machine head. And then somebody's got to be up there on, you know, safety harnesses, spider monkeying down and attaching the propellers that are being held or the blades that are being held in place. Yeah, I mean, it's something. Oh, somebody texts in and says, Andrew, longtime listener. I own a CNC machine shop in Pensacola. We make some of the gears. The tolerance we hold for those gears is plus or minus 0.001 of an inch. A hair on your head has a thickness of 0.003. So the tolerance is a third of a hair, a human hair. And somebody else texts in, yeah, they're fiberglass, not plastic. Okay, fair enough. I agree. And they're all made local. There's two companies that make them locally that make those the nacelles or the shells, you know, that go around the machine head. So anyway, just a absolutely fascinating opportunity to see. I think a thing that we all know is there but don't realize how significant it is. You know, I mean, but when you're, and I know what's going to happen too is you've ever driven around town and you see one or like a truck is pulling one and you're like, wide load, why do I have to wait? You know, why are the police making me stop at the light? They actually had to stop for the sheriff. We're doing a traffic control when I was entering the plant yesterday. And I'm like, no, this is annoying. I got to wait 30 seconds. And then when I realized the millions and millions and millions of dollars of economic impact and jobs and taxes that this has and the impact on national energy production, which is approaching a shortage in the next 10 years. Okay. So we need more of all different kinds. You know, you start to appreciate a little bit more, but here's what's going to happen. I guarantee this is what's going to happen. You'll notice them and you already did notice them, but you didn't really notice them. And now what's going to happen is when you see one or you're out at the, you know, Plaza de Luna and you look left to the port and you see them all on stage in there and you see them on scenic or wherever, or traveling by rail or traveling by truck, just the empty shells, and you're going to notice them, and then you're going to notice them, and then you're like, oh my God, they're everywhere.
And then we say, thanks, Andrew.
But that's heightened awareness, and you can say thanks to GE, and you can say thanks to all the, you know, 700 employees that make this massive economic benefit to our area happen every day. So anyway, really cool, I thought.
Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay in the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Because I think it is not understood how big an impact little Pensacola has when it comes to the entire wind manufacturing industry. We're kind of a big deal, guys. So, like, we should all feel good about that.
Yeah, we're kind of a big deal. This is Brandi McGraw. She is the plant leader for GE Vernova's Pensacola wind energy plant, where they make there's four pieces that go into a windmill. There's the pole or the stick, whatever you want to call it, the 300-foot tower. There is the what I would have called until yesterday the nacelle. The nacelle is just the shell, the fiberglass white big box. Inside the shell is the important stuff. That's the motor. That's the assembly that makes everything generate electricity. On the front end of that, there's that cone. That's the hub. And then the propeller blades attached to that hub, three typically, the ones they make here, it's three. And so what we make here is we don't make the blades. Those are made closer to locations. These are mostly all shipped out west, okay? But they're, you know, the blades are made there, and then they buy the sticks from somebody else. But we make, literally in Pensacola, every single week, 40 of those hubs. That's the kind of the triangular piece that the blade's attached to. And we make a 24 of the 3-megawatt and 24 of the 2-megawatt motor assemblies, or what you would have called the nacelles. So when you see those things, that's a huge amount of energy. Each one of those produces enough energy for roughly 1,500 homes. So if you kind of do the math on it, like Plant Crist is the way I made sense of it. Plant Crist has got about a 1,000 megawatt capacity. And so that's how much energy it can produce at any given time. And the plant at GE Vernova off Scenic is making about 6,000 megawatts of energy every single year. So they are manufacturing windmill capacity to generate as much electricity as 6 or 7 of the Plant Crist every year. Although they changed the name to something else, the Gulf Happy Green Time Energy Plant or something. It's got a new name. I just can't remember it off the top of my head. Okay, so got a chance to tour the facility yesterday. It was fantastic. I mean, what we're doing here is phenomenal, and we are preparing for a future in which there's likely to be an energy shortage. You know, think about AI and how much energy is used by AI. Think about, you know, expansion of demand for electricity in all kinds of ways. And, you know, we need it all. We need oil. We need natural gas. You know, we need coal. We need nuclear. I say we need nuclear. We need wind. We need solar. We need all of it.
Because we are going to have an electricity shortage. We know that it is going to be really drastic by the time we get to 2030. But what we're projecting is that it's going to be at least a 16% shortage volume in terms of electricity that's required. So this means that we have to look for all options to be able to make electricity.
Yeah, agreed. And they have the capacity. They run 2 shifts. They have a capacity to expand to 3 shifts because they do four 10-hour shifts, okay, Monday through Thursday. So 2 shifts of 10 hours each, so 2 crews basically. But they have the capacity to go to a 3rd shift. They're not there yet, but that could increase by about 50% their output. And by the way, just for comparison, there's a plant in Germany she was comparing to. So again, we make 40 hubs and 48 of the two different size motor assemblies. And this plant in Germany makes like 7 hubs a week. Like nothing. This is a huge 700 people. 700 people work at this facility.
Our goal within wind energy is to deliver 6 times the current terawatt hours to the grid in the next 20 years. And just again, to talk about how awesome Pensacola is, like in the U.S., we are the number one installers of wind turbines for the last 5 years. So again, we've got like a wind energy powerhouse in Pensacola that is very unknown. It includes Jupiter Bach. It includes Blue Wind. It includes WTEC. There are a variety of suppliers in this area that are a part of this overall wind ecosystem.
Yeah, and the fiberglass shells, the nacelles, are made here, okay, by two of those companies that she just mentioned. So one of my questions that I had was about kind of like the employees and about safety, because, you know, you're in a major manufacturing facility. Safety is a big concern. And, you know, she gave a pretty interesting answer on this. John Pickens, we'll come back to this in just a second. John Pickens has traffic on the 5s. John?
That's right. We're still rolling accident-free right now, but I'm still seeing some delays on Avalon Boulevard southbound as you head toward I-10. It's backed up from an earlier accident, but we're just seeing congestion delays at this point. Other than that, we are looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the 5s.
Hey, if you're thinking about that next vehicle, Frontier Motors is a great place to start your shopping. You know, they've got a wide selection, 300 cars, trucks, vans, SUVs, things that are, you know, 1 to 3 or 4 years young is kind of what they specialize in. So it's all almost new cars. They're going to warranty them to 10 years or 100,000 miles. So they're cars you can count on. And that means that you're going to basically, it's like you're getting almost new. Okay, probably one other owner, sometimes maybe two, okay, but typically one owner, and then you can drive it as long as you drive it. And what you can do is ask them, what do people like? What do people not like? You know, what features do people appreciate or not appreciate? Which cars are holding value, losing value? Ask them. Think of them as kind of a consultant advisor instead of the adversary that we usually think of a used car place as, like, you know, they're the enemy and we're trying to pry a car out of their hands and they're trying to pry all the cash out of your hand. How about think of them as the place they are, which is trying to be a service, to be a helper. You know, that's why they've been in business for so long. That's why they are going to continue to be here, because they think of it not as just one transaction, but as sort of a lifetime relationship. Frontier Motors, serving the Pensacola community for more than 25 years, behind the Big Buffalo on Beverly Parkway. Be sure to tell them Andrew McKay says hi. Back to the conversation about employee safety with Brandy McGraw, the plant leader at the GE Vernova plant on Scenic yesterday.
It's obviously a big priority. Can you talk a little bit about safety record here at this facility, maybe in comparison with GE Vernova generally?
So within this facility, we have folks that, when we talk about the seniority of our team, we have folks that either have like 15, maybe about 15 years seniority, or people that have 2 years seniority. So within the facility, we have kind of two things that we try to balance when it comes to safety. So those folks with the lower seniority maybe don't fully always understand the risk, so that creates opportunity for us to be able to engineer out the risk, put in better processes and tools to ensure that our employees are safe.
And that makes sense, because you have a lot of contract employees, a very high number of Landrum employees. We'll get to that a little bit in just a moment. But, you know, people who don't have a lot of experience don't know the risks, and so you've got to, you know, plan around them. And if you're in a manufacturing or production facility, these are things you guys are all thinking about if you work in, you know, a safety necessity environment. Then the problem with the senior employees is they've been around it so long they get complacent, right?
For more senior employees, we often experience, or we can, I shouldn't say often, but you have the risk of experiencing complacency because they've been doing it so long. So we have to find ways to be able to keep how we do things safely fresh in their mind, and how to keep changing those processes so that we can engineer out risk.
You know what it reminded me of is the conversations we have with Greg McWhirter at Blue Angels days, when, you know, for the summer show. And one of the things he always says is that the Blues, in the process of adjusting their show throughout the year, they're always changing small things in the formations, just in terms of like sight patterns or where you line up next to the other Jets. Because by changing it just a little, you keep fresh the standard instead of getting complacent, lazy, which is when mistakes happen. And I just thought that, you know, it seemed very interesting, the similarity between safety and the Blue Angels, and what at least, you know, the employees in a long, repetitive, you know, mechanical assembly process might have to deal with.
For me, any injury that occurs in the facility is one injury too many. So if our safety record is anything greater than zero, we've injured someone at work, somebody's life has been inconvenienced because you got doctor's visits, all these other things. So anything like that is just unacceptable for us. The way that we manage the facility is through a tool that we call SQDC. SQDC stands for safety, quality, delivery, and cost. And there is a reason that safety is first. Because if we are not doing work safely, if our employees aren't able to go home to enjoy the things that they want to do, then we failed in the leadership team. So that's kind of how we approach it.
I mean, I love that attitude. That's the attitude you want from a plant leader. You know, that's fantastic. Now, as far as the workforce, I thought it was kind of interesting. This is Damaris Sims, who was our particular tour guide, D, we called him. Really good guy. Liked him a lot. Anyway, kind of we're talking about the contract laborers versus the GE hires, because you might wonder, like, who works here? Well, we talked about it.
So technicians are... coming in as a contractor, you don't have to have any real experience. I'm not sure what Landrum asked for them to have as far as work experience. Pretty much, you know, how do you feel about working in this type of environment? Because they're job sourcers, you know what I mean? They want people to get out and work. If they feel comfortable doing this, we're going to onboard them. We're going to give them a week's worth of training before they even come out to the floor and touch any tools. Even when they come out to the floor, they still have a grace period that they're going to sit back and watch without putting hands on anything.
Yeah, a lot of preparation time before they get out there and touch torque guns, and, you know, right, and 40-ton cranes and all of that kind of stuff. In fact, it was kind of interesting because the guy who had been there the longest was the primary one operating the crane. We saw him lifting one of the base plates for one of the three megawatt machine heads, and, like, you lift this thing up, and then he turns it 90 degrees with his hand, like spinning it in place. This, God, I don't even know, you know, 50 ton, 30 ton. You know, I mean, it was like, it was a big sucker, right?
For people like me who know this stuff, yeah. And have done it for a while, absolutely I would like to have them come in with some type of mechanical background, because they'll pick up faster, they'll be safer just coming right in off the street, and then it'll just make us that much better. But for technicians that are GE, they're required to have 1 year's worth of manufacturing experience, which there's nowhere around here that offers that. But we do pick up people out of the military, some people with strong automotive, mechanical, aircraft or whatnot experience. And then just a ability to be coachable, be able to train others, because we got a lot of contractors coming in that we have to look over. And I think that's pretty much it. Be able to, you know, speak well and train others, like I said.
Yeah, and there, I mean, you know, they are always looking for people, and 700 people work there. It's pretty good pay, you know, so looking for all the right people. One of the things I noticed, by the way, just an observation, was a pretty high percentage of minority in their workforce, which, you know, I don't know that I expected something different, but higher, you know, like good, in a really good way, that this is an opportunity for all kinds of folks. And, you know, I asked them, and there's not any particular structure to that, goal for that or anything like that, but, you know, it was an observation that it seemed higher, like almost 50%, or it seemed to me. I'm only seeing one shift and the one time that I was there. I think my favorite story, other than the story about him getting up on the top of the 300-foot windmill and looking around and seeing that he got a chance to go out to the field, and he discovered that the one he climbed up on top of was one he had made. It had his initials on it, which I think would be an amazing thing. But he was talking to us about the guy who was operating the crane, the guy who had been there the longest. This is probably my favorite story of the day, just for a now versus then kind of thing.
And this guy operating the crane here, he's been here, I want to say, longer than anybody. He's been here longer than anybody. So he can tell you stories about when this place used to be Westinghouse. He said they used to smoke cigarettes while they worked. And when they got off work, they could hang around, play cards, have a few drinks. You know, things were way more lax back then.
The workplace of the past. The Mad Men manufacturing side, right? So, oh, and by the way, just so you kind of put all the picture together, the nacelles, the shells, are made here locally, but most of the components are shipped in through the port, like the big base plates that come from China. That's all shipped in via the port. Then it goes up to the facility. Then they manufacture and assemble them. And then, you know, they get shipped out on rail. Or they get sent, you know, they get laid down at the port. I think some of them even go out via shipping to other places as well, and then by rail from there. But the port is an essential part of this, like an absolutely essential part of the operation for GE Vernova. So anyway, just a fascinating time I had yesterday, and, you know, felt like I kind of, you know, vaguely knew, but now I really know, and I really appreciate the opportunity to learn about. 824 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. If you have, if you're 64, you're turning 65, you're going to convert over onto Medicare, and you might have questions or be confused about what that entails. Hey, it's normal. It's different. It's something you've not done before. Ricky Stewart, she's a good friend. Her whole family does insurance. She does this one portion of it, is help people get converted over onto Medicare and manage their plans. Advantage, supplement, prescription drugs, Medicaid. What is that? Does it apply to me? Do I qualify? The rules changing, you know, all that stuff. It can seem complicated, but she knows all the answers. She's such a fabulous sweetheart. Give her a call, 341-2185. Pick her brain, get information, sit down with her for a consultation. Insuredbyricky.com, or just look her up, Ricky Stewart Insurance. John Pickens has traffic on the files. John, did I miss anything you wanted to ask about? I keep forgetting to ask, but...
No, you covered a lot. There's a lot of information. It was a good series. I recommend people go back and listen to the podcast.
So the 6, the 7.
Yeah. Because you put it all together. It's like,
I so wish I could show you, but of course, for proprietary reasons, can't show you photos or videos. But I wish I could send you to the Facebook page where you could see it, because it is like breathtakingly cool to go inside this facility. Anyway, go ahead, sir.